It is true that I have not been a pastoral vicar, nor have I ever served in a congregation where we've had a vicar. In a certain sense, though, I think I can have developed some empathy, because I did serve a year of vicarage as a teacher after I had had only a couple of years of college and had a classroom of 44 kids in grades 1-4, and I never will forget the nightmare of those experiences. Those first 6 weeks of teaching were literally the most nightmarish of my life, even worse than coming to St. Louis at a sabbatical job in the summer of 1972. So I did have that aspect of empathy. Secondly, I have had the opportunity at the district to get acquainted with vicars as we did visitations to parishes and so forth. And in this connection, I did find some negative aspects which you might confirm from your own experience, particularly as it related to the teaching ministry and the teaching tasks. Some of them did find this a very frustrating experience, often as it related particularly to teaching confirmation classes, that there simply was not the joy and the satisfaction, the discipline, the procedures that they had hoped they might be able to achieve at that level, and so it was a source of frustration. Another thing that, in my experience, has sometimes happened with vicars, in those congregations, especially where there are schools, is that they have become sort of a buffer between the pastoral ministry there, as exercised by the pastor, and the teaching ministry, as exercised by members of the teaching staff. If the relationships at that level are less than optimum, it is pretty easy for the vicar to get involved in that process. He may be a younger person, and so there may be a somewhat natural antipathy toward him in connection of younger teachers. It could be that since he is neither, and yet both, teacher and pastor, the people might gravitate to him. And so there have been some unfortunate experiences in this, where one or the other side attempted to use the vicar not to build bridges, but rather for other purposes. I think another experience that has happened, which I say with regret, is that some vicars have been assigned to parishes which have Christian day schools, and those Christian day schools are lousy. The gap between the rhetoric of what we say our Christian day schools can be and the reality of what they are hit the vicar with a full force, so that it has not been only an isolated case or two where I have met former vicars who said that on the basis of my vicarage experience, I determined that the only condition that I have in my call is that that be to a parish without a school. But let me say that even as the Indians have learned to relish eyeballs of goats, maybe also something good can come out of this. And also, I have had the opposite experience, and I pray that this will be your experience with a vicar, that the educational ministry, as he exercises on his vicarage, has really been one of the highlights, something that he really savored, something that he really enjoyed. I was in the Colorado district a couple weeks ago and was working with a pastor and was told that the congregation just couldn't wait to call this man as their pastor. They called him as an assistant pastor because of the fantastic job that this fellow did in Christian education while he was a vicar. He had helped get that Sunday school revitalized, he had some youth education programs going, and they were just happy to call this guy back, and he was now their assistant pastor, because of the tremendous record he had in Christian education while on vicarage. A similar experience that I had last month was in Albuquerque, where we were sharing different models for confirmation ministry, especially that aspect of confirmation ministry in grades 6, 7, and 8. And the congregation at Redeemer had an interesting model which they had developed, where they had divided their total religious program for grades 6, 7, and 8 into 15 different modules, 15 different units. And the kids in those years could select any 10 of those. A module might be memorizing the six chief parts, it may be a visiting with the pastor, visiting some sick. It may be taking a course on evangelism. It may be working through a workbook. It may be writing a long essay on some books of the Bible. A variety of options. And I was tremendously impressed with this program. And they had just had the confirmation ritual, and the people who were there said this was probably one of the finest years we've had with our pupils, with our parents. And the fellow who developed that thing was a vicar. And so we know that this can also happen. And finally, we know that the teaching role of the pastor, and you can tell me this better than I, is certainly one of his most critical roles, because he is often in a teaching role. And therefore, that which you do to help a vicar find his identity, and I so much appreciated hearing that, as a teaching minister, can have tremendous implications in his total ministry. I'm sure that you've already thought about that the minute the vicar gets into this teaching role, he is torn between a couple ends of a continuum. There's on the one hand the feeling, I suspect, that he is probably a pretty good teacher. I suspect that he feels rather comfortable that his level of the knowledge of theology and his understanding of the biblical imperatives is really quite a bit better and more advanced than almost any other teacher in that parish. Maybe he will feel even more so than the pastor who went to the seminary some years ago, and I now have learned the newer stuff, whatever that may be. So he has that as part of his mental baggage. He also, through some strange processes at work in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, might feel very comfortable that his teaching ability will be considerably beyond that of the other professional teaching ministers in that parish, even though they may have had DCE experience or be parochial school teachers. It has not been unusual in my experience to find him to come with that conceptualization. But that's only one end of the continuum. The other end of the continuum is that when he thinks of facing that class, especially if it's a junior confirmation class, or if it's an older, over 65 women on a weekday Bible class, that he's scared stiff. And so he struggles between those two identities of feeling very comfortable in knowing this stuff and let me ask, and yet the feet of clay that he tends to feel when he gets into a teaching situation. And so I think we need to be aware of that. I think also one of the things that a vicar gets hung up on this thing is the matter of the temporariness of his assignment. He gets a certain freedom from knowing that I'm only here for a year. You know, I will not have to worry about too much about what happens after a year in this place. But that very temporariness of his staying also tends to do something about his availability for emergency assignments. I did a little thing around the table at the cafeteria where a lot of the BPE people work this noon. And I just asked each of the pastors on our staff, we have 16, 18 pastors, and I sort of went around and I didn't get to talk to all of them, but I said, hey, think back to your vicarage and think back of your roles as educators. What turned you off most? The consistent answer was to suddenly be asked to teach a confirmation class when my bishop had to make a sick call, had a funeral, had to go to Winkle or whatever it was. That those experiences really threw him. Because his bishop would say that we're on the seventh commandment, or we're in the second part of the third article. And he went in there. And the tragedy, as they felt it, and this is sort of, I'm putting a composite picture, is that the more times they went in, sort of the worse it got. Because while the pastor had a discipline and had a relationship with those kids, the vicar coming in, and then not coming in again for a couple weeks, and not quite being sure what his role is over against those kids, and just being a substitute teacher, that this was a horrendous nightmare. So maybe we can begin. And interestingly enough, let me might just throw this in on the side. It has nothing to do with the vicarage, really. I did a workshop on team ministry a couple of months ago in Nebraska. And I asked the principals, what's one of your biggest hang-ups in your relationships with your pastor? And when you get to 7th and 8th graders, where they're schooled now, it's this very point. I have decided that on Tuesday morning, which is when the pastor takes the confirmation class, that's when I correct papers or whatever I do. And then on Tuesday morning, at 8:15, he calls and says, hey, take confirmation for me. Mrs. Schmidt is sick. And this was a tremendous piece of sandpaper in the team ministry process. But I mentioned it here primarily because the vicar feels that the temporariness of his assignment for 1 year sometimes thrusts him into temporary teaching assignments. And he, at that very point, needs something more than temporary because he's in the learning process and needs to do considerably more training. Now, what I'd like to do for a while this afternoon is hopefully in the context of the assignment, I want to take several theoretical statements about what Christian education is and who it is for and how it takes place, elucidate on them briefly, and then have you share with me just a little bit what some of the implications of this are, generally, but also specifically in your relationship with your vicars. Then I'd like to take a few minutes to get out of this configuration and for you to share with three or four or six others a couple little incidents that might come up in your life with your vicar, and I have structured them for you, and you just share with one another how you might handle that situation. And then we'd like to kind of come back again for a few closing minutes on talking about how do we evaluate and supervise a specific teaching process which has been assigned to a vicar. Suppose we've assigned him to an adult Bible class, and I'm supposed to help him now in taking a look at how well did he do. What are the questions that I ask? What are the questions that he asks? What are the procedures we might use? Or take it on the other end. Maybe he's doing a teacher training thing for Sunday school, and you are the pastor, and you want to help him now gain some insight as to how did I function as Christian educator in this process. And I want to talk about that a little bit at the end. Lastman said, we always have to have paper for this. Don't let this help you. Sure. I did something on this that I don't know what it means, but I decided that maybe our report to the New Orleans Convention might give us some clues as to the topics to talk about as we talk about the general scope of Christian education. I operated on the assumption that none of you have taken the Board of Parish Education report in the yellow book and either committed it to memory nor written an outline of it and a synopsis. So I think I'm reasonably safe in the assumption that this won't be hashed over stuff. I'd like to begin with a statement as to what education which is truly Christian is. And while it may seem tremendously redundant, I think we need to affirm once again that if education is worthy of the name Christian, it really has to be rooted in the gospel. All of us know that there is a fantastic amount of education going on. And when you try to narrow it down and say, now, what makes education that is Christian different? Well, I think one of the characteristics certainly is the relevance of the gospel in that situation. All of public ed, which is education, operates under the framework of law. All of it. It is that distinctive dimension which affirms that the individual has been freed by Jesus Christ, that he is worth something because God has said so, that his sins are forgiven, that eternal life has begun, that God says yes to him, that he can be freed from all the demons that possess him, be they ignorance or prejudice or sexism or bigotry or narrowness. All of that is the tremendous freeing power of the gospel, which is at work in Christian education, and that's what makes it distinctive. Another way of saying it is that Christian education, which is really Christian, always has a freeing function. It always contributes toward the possibility of freeing the person up to be all that God intended him to be. So he has to be free from all of the consequences and guilt of sin. And he has to be freed from all of those things that inhibit him in his interactions with God, with his fellow man, and with his creation. And so everything that we do in Christian education is in this gospel context, which announces the freedom which is available to him through Jesus Christ. If this is true, then we need to ask ourselves, does this come only through proclamation? And I say B, that it is really transmitted primarily through the love, the warmth, the acceptance, the forgiveness expressed by the teacher and by the learners one for the other. Recently, some research has demonstrated that which all of us knew from our experience, I suspect, that really the critical difference in the Christian education process is the teacher. The teacher. Everybody took a look at all the doctoral, not doctrinal, but doctor's degree studies, and tried to see what some components were that were the same in effective Christian education. You know, was it the time of the class? Was it the length of the class? Was it what period in life they took it? Was it the amount of memory work done? And more, the single factor that was being factored out was the type of person that the teacher was who did the communicating, who did the teaching, who set the group processes, who spoke the words, who created the environment for forgiveness and so forth to take place. And that moves into C, because this person has to be more than just a charismatic heathen. You know, it has to be more than just some guy who's got a smooth personality and who's taken a lot of sensitivity training and transactional analysis. Because Christian education is a process of mutual sharing, of dialogue, of discovery, of questions and answers, of individual and group activity, of laughter and tears, of confessing sins, and of hearing absolution. Now, let's think about that for a few moments. And if that's true, what are some implications? How about, let's just share, just throw out an implication. If this is really what Christian education is, what's an implication? A general implication. Sorry? Know what the gospel is. You aren't going to communicate that which you don't know. Okay. Any other?
The implication of closeness between the teacher and the group is being a complete group.
All right. The relationship that exists between that teacher and the group. And boy, you know, there, so I'm thinking of the, while we're going to talk a little about the vicar just a little bit.
Doing gospel.
I'm sorry?
Doing gospel.
What do you mean by that?
The whole total life. You know, as a result of the tremendous love for Christ, how that flows.
Okay. Now let's take it down and narrow it into your vicar. What are the implications? This is what Christian education is. What are the implications for how you are going to work with your vicar in Christian education? Can you think of any implication? Specifically now for the vicar and for the way in which you work with him.
I would say in asking him talking about his classes, or a specific class, you could ask him, how did the gospel come through to the kids, and how did they understand it?
Do you hear him? To ask, when you finish the class, and now you're talking with him, whether it's eighth grade, or an adult, or substituted for the kindergarten, when you get done with that class and you share with him, now this is what you did, how did you feel that the gospel came through today? How do you feel, as you look back now, that the students felt the power of the gospel, heard the gospel, experienced the gospel, saw it? I saw a hand over here. Here.
I think it could also imply that you do more than give them an opportunity to teach occasionally a class on a substitute basis, but you give them that opportunity to teach over a long period of time where he could develop relationships and so on.
Very important point, I think. That we have to have the vicar have a long enough experience with the class so that interpersonal relationships can be developed. He cannot just be a substitute teacher. He cannot just take the topics on Wednesday evenings with the ladies. He may want to do that occasionally, but he's got to have some group in which he can learn to get these group processes going.
Know your vicar as a person. You have to know him. One of the things I heard this afternoon, as I said earlier, was this, this thing that's going to take place between you and the vicar. And we can't talk about education and his educational task without realizing that your relationship with him is sort of a model of the total Christian education thing. If the way in which you deal with that vicar in educating him, the same principles are at work as what you expect him to use in the class. That means you've got the whole thing of you, there are certain skills you want him to know, there are certain facts he's got to know about the faith, and there are certain attitudinal things that are to come out. Because this is the model. Very important. Very important. One of the guys I asked today about his vicar experience said that's what was so terrible about it. Because the way in which he was taught on how to be a good vicar violated everything that he thought about how good education should take place. Because it was always top down. It was always being told. It was highly verbal. And there was no opportunity for response. Okay?
I just wanted to sort of throw that out. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. I think you pretty well got it. Vicar Reedley knows, needs to know who's going to be teaching. I'll skip the next one. Christian education includes every what. We still tend to forget this when we've said that so often. But you have to identify these groups. And obviously you can't have your vicar as much as you would like. You won't be able to give him the opportunity, I don't think, to have contact with all the groups. Maybe we'll play with that a little bit. Do you think that's possible? You know, you've got this thing, you've got a weekday school, probably, you probably have a Sunday school, you probably have Sunday school teachers' meetings, you probably have a week, some of you will have a Christian day school, and have an adult Bible class, and have a youth group, you'll have retreats, you'll have your voters' meeting as an educational process, you'll have the educational topic, so-called, at the ladies' aid, the training that you give your church officers when they are elected as an educational. Wonder how much of that we can get a vicar involved in. It'll vary, I know. But maybe you can think back to your experience a little bit on the scope of Christian education. Kindergarten, preschool, you know, that's the fastest growing agency, is the preschool programs. Do you think anything that comes to mind when you think of your vicar?
Yeah, well, thinking back at my vicarage, I had very little opportunity to do this. I would think it would be wise to at least expose him to it, let him visit the class if he doesn't conduct it. If he has the time and the opportunity, or the whatever session it is, and give him a taste of the gamut.
Okay. I would say, no, okay. Anybody want to disagree?
No.
Okay. All right, let's follow that up a little bit. How can we make that a worthwhile experience? Maybe he's not going to teach this kid. Maybe he got a preschool program. You know, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, kids come in. The tiny tots, call it what you will. And you say, he ought to be exposed to this. How can that be a worthwhile experience for him?
I don't know if he necessarily needs to be exposed to everything.
Okay, you take the other route.
I think we've got to find out our man, learn to know our man that's with us, and find out what's his bag, too. And it may not be that that's what his is.
Okay, question?
I found that it's helpful to let them be a passive participant to experience what is going on before they're asked to be in any kind of teacher relationship, because they get the experience from the other side of the fence.
All right, so you're saying, okay.
And how can a vicar really know if something is his forte unless he is exposed? I think these are areas that you need to look at. Just because he says, well, I don't think I'd like that, doesn't mean he doesn't like it, sort of like this illustration we had last hour.
I don't know unless you taste it for them.
I don't know if I agree with any of you, but I would imagine that when a vicar completes a term and leaves, there are holes in the program that if he was making a contribution, he's going to leave gaps in the program. I would think that the natural conclusion for a pastor to come to is, let's fill the hole with a new vicar. And therefore, a vicar, instead of being given 3 months for us to determine what his gifts are and what he likes to work at or what he needs, and then finding a plot for him to work at the congregation, I would suspect that the tendency would be the other way, to say, here, Victor, are 3 areas you're going to work in. You're going to take 2 people who don't like it, how it is, don't want it. And you're going to get this and you're going to get that. And that's what I suspect happens in many cases. That there are these holes. And unless you've got such a well-organized congregation that the vicar just sort of glides along with the youth program and glides along with the weekday school, and then he's really not making a contribution, and we've got something else. This would be what I would suspect. So he's got to be in there.
So you're going to find, okay. You say it very well. Let me back up just for a moment and suppose that you do agree that he, I'm going to come to that later. Once he agrees he's going to do something, how do we help him in that? I would like to come to that a little bit later. Let's do this. I think that we've had enough. Let's take a look on this second page. Here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Because I want each one to get involved just a little bit here with somebody else. Okay? So that you can share with the group around. I want to take these next few. And just talk with the guys around you, okay? I hope we'll all join in, huh? Christian education utilizes the best possible curriculum materials and media for teaching the faith. Now here's the situation. Your vicar is asked to teach an adult Bible class. He asks you what materials to use. How do you answer him? Let's do that with a group right around you. Just a couple minutes.
Okay, I just wanted to throw that one out. I'm assuming that most groups said the first questions are going to be like, what's your goal? What are the hurts that you are trying to heal in this particular class? What are the felt needs of that group? If they're not able to express those needs, can you help them to discover the needs? So you have to be particularized, whether it's a young adults group, an adult group, and always together with that vicar, try to determine what are the specific objectives. And then take a look at some of the available materials. I brought along Guide to Growth, which is a bibliography, which we just came out with, of all of the adult materials that are available from the Synod. If you should want to pick one of those up, that's fine. Somebody suggested that it might be a very interesting thing to have a great deal of freedom in looking at a lot of this stuff and let the vicar try it. You know, let the vicar try and then tell you how it works. Okay, we're going to do another one, because this is a real one. I hear this one, I think, as much as any other. Christian education in the parish depends upon well-trained teachers. Frustration. The vicar is asked to lead the Sunday school teacher meetings. He's never attended one in his life. What's the next step? Now, you see, this is real, because that Sunday, when the fellow goes away to the Concordia, he's not around to teach Sunday school. So he hasn't even attended one of these classes. And now he's asked to lead one. What's the next step?
Let him sit in on one first before you conduct it.
All right. The other suggestion. Talk about this one in a group. We're going to move back to the small group. All right, let's just take this specific thing. What do you think has to happen in a Sunday school teacher's meeting? What are you trying to accomplish in your Sunday school teacher meeting? Get the teachers to show up. How do you try to get them to know the gospel? Well, how does one do that? Draw it out of the lessons which they will be teaching. Use interaction. Right. See, I'm glad I didn't have to say that.
You missed Maggie. I thought I meant relationships.
Oh, all right. What kind of things are you trying to do with these teachers? Let's sort of classify them. One of them was have them to live under the gospel more.
Yes.
I aim for personal and spiritual growth.
All right. All right. There's personal growth. And that personal growth has both the spiritual dimension. And in order to do that, you can do a Bible study, You can do worship experiences. You can see films. You can have witnessing. That element, I think, ask yourself with your vicar, how are we going to develop the spiritual growth? And then the second concomitant thing is the growth in their teaching skills. The growth in the teaching skills. Keep those two really in mind.
They have nothing to do with the vicaries, but our Mission Life program is sort of killed the Sunday school teachers' meeting.
All right, tell us why did it kill it?
Because we have different lessons for each grade, and if we're going to help them at all in preparing that lesson, we have to zero in on their particular level.
Somebody else said no.
I don't think it killed them, I think it probably strengthened them.
Now, how can you say it strengthened them?
Well, I think that it made the teachers more aware of the fact that they need to do the preparation and not the pastor and have him come and record for them what they are to say on the given lesson session.
We're trying to sort of float our teachers free from, not from the Mission Life stuff, but we're trying to let them do their own thinking. So when they come to teachers' meetings, we give them a second approach to something else. We study a book of the Bible or something, which will generally deepen their faith so they can teach the Mission Life stuff better.
The most successful stories that I've heard about Mission Life are just this, that zero in A on developing this person aside from those materials. Secondly, on zeroing in on teaching techniques, with the people sharing what I did last week, how it worked, this poster thing I tried, the drama didn't work, what are we doing with memory work, teaching techniques, those two dimensions, not necessarily at the same meeting. And then the third is always the practical aspects, very practical, how do you get this projector to work, the best three class techniques, and all of those kinds of stuff. Again, if you want, and again, I think the vicar might really enjoy working through some of these. Again, I'm going to put them up just wherever wants them. We have listed here all of the teacher training courses that are available. And they are both those that deal with specific books of the Bible, including some other kinds of multimedia teaching techniques to help the teacher, 6-session ones, 8-session courses. If you're interested, take that one. The next one I want you to discuss, please, just in your little group, because it's very personal. The family is a basic unit for the Christian teaching nurturing process. Incidentally, you know that a lot of people disagree with that now. You can read books that are really blowing this one, that it's peer groups, that it's media, that's not the family, not even the extended family. But we, and we've been, some people say we're beating a dead horse, but nevertheless, we still think it is. The family is a basic unit. Now, agree or disagree, the way in which the supervisors, supervising pastor's family conducts itself becomes the model for the vicar's future family. Agree, disagree, good or bad, as a teaching thing. Okay, I'd like to spend the next 5 minutes or so thinking about this team ministry idea. Let's just see how many of us are involved in that. When your vicar will be with you next fall, let's assume now this is next fall, your vicar is there. In how many cases will there be more than two professional ministers? Let's see your hands. More than you and the vicar. How many of you will have that? More than you and the vicar. You'll either have teachers or a deaconess or a DCE. Yes. Okay, I think that's enough. Sorry about those of you where there's only going to be two. I'd like to think about how we can get all of these professional ministers. I hate that term, but by professional ministers now, I mean the pastor, assistant or associate pastor, the vicar, a DCE, a deaconess, parochial school teachers. How can we get that group working together as a team? It doesn't do us any good, I think, to bemoan it, but we're not exactly famous in the Missouri Synod for team ministry. We really haven't stopped. Let's talk about this. How can we get this thing going so it's a team, including the vicar? Have any of you done something that you have found helpful to create this team ministry? Yes.
I start with a 3-day retreat in August.
Beautiful. What do you do there?
In terms of specific agendas or objectives.
Let's begin with objectives and then share just a few things that you do as well, both.
sort of quick, you know.
Development of the personal interrelationship is probably number one, and secondary is spiritual growth.
How do you build these interpersonal relations at a retreat? How do you structure
for things them? Like awareness type activities, some of the games that are available for human relationship structuring.
Suppose I want to have this kind of...
like, I'm okay, you're okay. I've used that a couple of times as a study and a practicum.
Suppose I've never run a simulation game in my life. But I think I've heard about it and I'd like to do it. What would I do next? Where would I find out about it? Who might help me? You got any ideas on that?
I think probably the executive secretary for a parachute
game. If any of you are interested in references for simulation games, we do have some, yes. How do you handle this spiritual thing? Spiritual development at the retreat?
Bible studies will be structured just in a modest way that is in the agenda over a period of time, part of which will be shared by different members of the staff, motions that they also prepare and put into them.
Who prepares the agenda for this retreat?
The inputs for general content come from the whole staff, and then it's refined by myself and the principal.
The reason I'm dwelling on this a little bit, I would have to say that in my experience with real key ministry, there's almost always this kind of thing. Now, especially in the fall, they get this group together. Usually some member has got a cabin somewhere, and it doesn't cost that much. And I find that you have to be together overnight at least once for it to really be effective. And you have that kind of thing. How much program planning do you do? Is this a program planning experience or not?
No.
No, all right. It's a big, some do and some don't. Some zero in on program planning and others say, just what this gentleman is saying, keep program planning out. Let's just get to know one another as fellow members of this same body. All right, what another suggestion? Some of you, yes?
I would just like to go along with it. I think that's a very good idea. I would use that. That's the greatest thing to retreat and not to plan that. So like, just a small group, if you only have the vicar and his wife and the pastor and his wife to have some time on the way together and break the time. We've had all of our teachers. And then another thing you do is, this is partly positive and partly negative. Every Wednesday, I meet with the staff member, three male teachers, and the vicar and myself for lunch. It just happens to work out like that. And it was just fine here, and we got many relationship things. We got all kinds of things settled there. And about 3 weeks ago, as we left my office where it takes place, we couldn't get through the door because there was pasted over the door by one of our female teachers, male chauvinist. So we decided next year we have to change that somewhere.
Okay. But one thing that I'm really liking that I'm hearing is a structured opportunity for members of the team to communicate. I'm saying an awful lot of negative things. I don't want to come off that way. But I tend to get called in when there are problems. And one of the problems is that he just doesn't communicate. Meaning the pastor. I can't get in to see him. He's always too busy. It really means a lot to our fellow team members, and I know this because the staff says the same thing about me, that I'm not around enough. And so it really hurts. We've got to be available to our fellow team members, and I hope that will be true of the vicar, and not just you and the vicar, but you and the vicar and the principal and the DCE.
How about this congregational secretary? I know work in that same thing with anybody too.
Okay, how about, have any of you tied in the congregational secretary?
Up there.
Sorry.
I heard around the church while we're gone.
Yeah. You do?
Yes. Well, on a weekly staff meeting where we have the principal, pastor, deaconess, and parish secretary.
Oh.
And we usually try to involve one of the parish officers in the counseling that.
You know, all of you, I'm sure you've all heard of Lyle Schaller, right? loud scholar is one who really stresses that these kinds of decisions involve those layups are ever possible. It's a problem because of their schedule. So here's a weekly staff meeting in which he does, he is deaconess, vicar now, and secretary and a church officer.
Principal.
And the principal.
I'd like to ask the man before us that he said he thought it was a good idea for the vicar and his wife and pastor and his wife, if he's just that many, just that four. Would this be a good way to start off the vicarage experience?
All right, you heard the question.
Or do most start in the fall? Or would that not be a good thing?
Who knows more about that than I? At very early in the experience, early after he gets there, or maybe even before he gets there, is that what you're saying?
No. Very early.
Very early. To get away for 2 days.
No.
Four of you.
We haven't done it by getting away a couple of days, but our vicars from Springfield, when we found this out, we arranged to have them over and spend the day.
He's from Danville, in case you don't know, so that's just down the road.
Yeah. We had them over and spent a day and an evening with them already on two occasions, which I think helped a lot.
Let's have a couple more suggestions yet before we go on to it. On building this team ministry.
Seems to me that one of the dangers that I found myself, not with vicars because I had vicars, but with school staff people that I sometimes have all these great plans and do this, and then it tails off, and that can be a real negative thing. You know, you get busy and don't carry on with it. Can cause things to turn very much the other way.
We've experienced that too. 2 years ago, we started having our weekly staff meetings. The principal began to try to involve me a little more heavily in the regular total staff meetings of the teaching staff as a whole. They met every Thursday after school at 3:15, and I would have the option of being there. And I wouldn't always make it. But out of that grew something which I think really helped our staff. We have, twice a month, we have a staff communion service. And twice a week, we have staff devotion in which I'm involved. This is early in the morning. And those things have really helped a lot toward creating an atmosphere of mutual trust and mutual openness.
Sounds very good.
I found that it works the same with the vicar, but in the school, just to show up once in a while and walk up and down the hall and early in the morning or when the kids are coming out, and almost all, every day that I do it, a teacher will come to me with something. I think it's a matter of availability.
Good word. Availability. Keyword. Miss Honest?
Yeah, I was just going to ask the question that when do you always lead the devotions?
Well, in fact, we take turns. We actually have it charted out for several months in advance. We take turns. I don't even do the total communion service myself. When we celebrate the sacrament, sometimes the deaconess takes everything. Usually I get involved in the consecration, but not always. Something
will
be cleared with the congregation.
My limited experience with vicars has been that they are very, very open to these group processes and team ministry. I really have to say that. They are really great on that. I think they have a lot to teach us on this. So exploit that. You get the whole team involved. Okay, so the last few minutes. I'm sorry.
I got a dirty question for you. I'm going to nail it. Our problem in our congregation is not with team ministry, which functions very well, but our problem, at least I think of it, our problem is with the recently graduated male teachers. We got them from Seward, St. Paul, and Little Forest. And these guys don't know what the doggone church is all about. I don't even think these guys care where their paycheck comes, just so it comes. And you say to these guys, team ministry, and they say, this is it, right here in my conscience. And you talk about stewardship, and they say, forget it, Buster, you know? And, wow, well, what's going on? Maybe it's not fair for you to say, what's going on back there? But
I expect that the vicar is going to add maturity to my staff. The 24-year-old vicar. Maybe this is a nasty thing.
No, it's just that's just.
But I think that there's a tremendous need for a balance. I don't know what's going on back at the schools, but I got a hunch that what they are doing is producing tremendous teachers who don't know how to fit into the congregation life. And my principal has got about 16 or 18 years experience, and he's analyzed it this way. He said, when I graduated, we were trained to fit into the program. He said, these teachers nowadays don't fit into the program. And I'm not saying that, I'm saying they don't fit.
Couple points. One.
It's really rough. And you know, instead of these guys being pillars and supports in their congregation, they're a pain in the neck. And I you know, I got people looking over my shoulder to see who's still back there. I'd like to know.
A couple of comments. One, no consolation, but comment. Point one. 2 years ago, the Board for Higher Education, and I do have the statistics on this, the Board for Higher Education did a study to the district executives and pastors and principals and ask the question, if you could change one thing in your young teachers, what is that one thing you would want to change? And it was that open-ended, so you could say anything from the length of their hair to the kinds of cars they drive to their theology, and the by far, the second one was far removed, was this point. Give them a vision of total parish ministry. This was the most common complaint. So that doesn't help solve your problem for a moment, except that it may indicate that it doesn't necessarily indicate that you aren't getting team ministry going, if that's any consolation. I think secondly, this is on behalf of the teachers, the processes and preparation required for classroom teaching today is so much more time-consuming and demanding that the beginning teacher often has just about all he or she can hack just to cope with that. Therefore, we begin with minimal congregational involvements.
I understand that. I think that's.
I think, thirdly, and I have no panacea other than to say that I believe all of us, whether we're in the parish or at the Synod Post, have got to keep feeding this message back to our seminary, to our colleges, because they need to hear this more. That if you are being called into a ministry, you are being called into a ministry and not just into a classroom teaching situation. And then you do these other things. Are they involved in the process? And you say you really try to involve them in the process. This sometimes is that the decisions are made for them, and therefore they pop out. That sometimes happens. In a few cases, again, I don't have any idea, they feel that their salaries are so low that it lessens the level of their commitment. These are not solutions to just raise the salary. The solution lies in changing the image of the teaching minister in the Lutheran school. And unless we do that, the future of the Lutheran school is not very bright, because one of the prime thrusts of Lutheran elementary schools has been the community of the parish and of the parents which surrounds it. And in that garden, that Lutheran school has grown. Now, it sounds like I'm bad-mouthing the teachers, and I speak the same way when I talk to them. That does tend to come, in my experience, with a little more experience. Now, I don't know, maybe some of your guys have been here 6-7 years and it isn't happening yet.
Oh, our staff, unfortunately, has grown so fast lately. And also, we tilted toward the female, not synodical type person. We said we need male image and synodical background. So we've been loading it up with synodical graduates who are male, and we've got a thing that's badly out of kilter, but we're reaching a solution. And every year this thing is, it's got to shape up. It's got to get better, because, you know, these are God's people, but it's kind of
like,
yeah, we're going through
birth pangs. And by all means, you know, let's keep working on getting these results by making the teacher a more person-orientated, gospel-centered person. Hopefully, this is the way to do it, rather than with coming a whole new set of guidelines out of the Board of Education. And that's the temptation.
Well,
you know, the temptation is to go to the Board of Ed and say, you've got to participate in six things, two things, one thing. We may have to do that, but that isn't going to be the solution. Okay, let me take the last now to talk about the individual class session. Your vicar is teaching the ladies' aid, he's teaching Sunday school, he's confirmation class. Just a few thoughts on this observing and supervising the evaluating process there.
I don't know.
Here I'm talking about supervising and evaluating the actual teaching process. I'd like to throw out, just for consideration, the possibilities of who might do some of this observing and evaluating. Operates on the premise that there's an open relationship existing. Even though you have that responsibility as supervising pastor, and I'm sure your vicar's manual will say that, don't feel that you're the only one who can do this. How much help can you get, you know, from the vicar bringing his own observations to you on how things are going without you being in his classroom? Ask him to do his self-evaluation. Some beginning teachers have found it helpful to simply play the cassette. Just play that cassette for half an hour while they're teaching. No pastor around, no principal around. And at the close of that session, to play that cassette back to them. If you have access to a videotape, I've used this quite a bit with beginning teachers, male and female. I've set up that videotape in their classroom and just let that thing run. And said, now in the privacy of after school hours, you watch yourself on this monitor. And I won't come in and say a word unless you want me to come and comment on it. And several people have said this has really helped them. So consider that if you have it available, if you're in your Comatica school, South Wisconsin District Office, Michigan District Office, Nebraska District, have these videotape stuff which they let congregations use. Certainly the supervising pastor, you have a role. How about a Lutheran school principal or teacher helping you out on this? Again, part of your staff, a DCE I should have had in here. How about involving your students? If you ever have the students evaluate, now don't just slip this in under the vicar, you know, but just say, now, let's talk about an instrument. We're going to ask the students on how well they thought the class went. What do you like about how the vicar taught you? When the vicar teaches me, I wish that. Complete that sentence. What I like most about the vicar's teaching is, and have them complete it. And share that. Yes.
I think here would be very helpful if the pastor allowed himself to suffer under the same kind of risk, first of all, possible.
I have that on the other sheet, that I really think that's true. I think, did you hear him? He said maybe the pastor should allow himself this. We're not very used to that. We're not very used to that. When I visited schools, the teachers all assumed that I would be visiting their classes. When I suggested that maybe I sit in on the confirmation class, I read the facial expressions quickly so that I sat in on very few. I wasn't there to prove anything, and if the guy didn't want me there, then I wasn't going to go in. You know. So this is simply to, and a professional teacher in the parish, I really wonder if that isn't a possibility. I don't know what the seminary would say about that. I didn't touch base. But if you've got a public school teacher who would come over and sit in as an observer, you know, Sunday school class, you know, weekday class, whatever the vicar is teaching.
This morning he said, do that.
He did. Oh,
yes, sir.
A couple of trends, and I imagine he told you that this morning too. That the supervisor's role is changing from that of a rater to a resourcer who uses tools to help teachers become more effective self-evaluators of their own teaching skill. Now that sounds like a lot of verbiage. But I remember, and I think we all do, how easy it is to get a rating chart. And I used to use them all the time when I was principal of a large staff. Roy knows about that. And I'd go into the room, you know, and I'd check them, you know, poor, good. excellent, on type of questioning, objectives were clear, discipline, classroom environment, and I check them all off, and then I sit down and I share with that teacher how I check them off. I'm not so sure that's how I would do it anymore. Because of the relationship that establishes, you see, that I'm the rater and I'm the judge. It's becoming much more to be a resourcer. And that ties in with the second trend, that the observer objectively notes what happens quantitatively, especially also among the learners. And following the observations, both the teacher and the observer together make qualitative judgments. Now, what does that all mean? That means that when you sit in the classroom, you just mark down things that you know. Just things that you know. Three students never answered a question. John slept through half the period. Mary was doing homework. The voice of the teacher was quite loud. I timed it, and within 10 minutes, you talk all the time. You know, these kinds of statements. I've been in your, you know, and then sit down with the guy afterwards and let's talk about it. Is this good? Is this bad? What does this say about you as a teacher? Another thing that is in this statement is there's much more emphasis today on observing the learner rather than on concentrating on the teacher. Rather than just watching what the vicar is doing, you watch what's happening with those kids and make some notations and then discuss that with the vicar. There are all kinds of grids and things that we're not going to bother going into, which we could. Now, what are some of those factors that you want to know? The objective of the class, and this comes through over and over, that there is both cognitive, which means thinking process, stuff that the guys have to know, the facts of the faith, the Bible history, the meaning of the six chief parts, the whatever the content is. And remember, we still need content. But then the affective as well. What are the emotional responses? What's the emotional climate of that classroom? What's the things of the spirit that you're observing? In the objective, are you only teaching to the head? Or are you teaching to the total person? The process, I remember. What processes is the teacher using? Teacher talk, teacher questions, teacher demonstration. How does he discipline? But also always be watching what processes are going on in the learning. Describe it. Listen to that. The appropriateness. That simply means, is what you did appropriate for this situation? Some teachers can use group processes. One pastor just said to me, you know, I'm just still the most comfortable with the Blue Catechism, and I would feel completely out of place if I were somehow or another using a role-playing technique with the seventh grade. And I'm just I just can't change at where I'm at. And therefore, when I try to use the role-playing as the pastor, that's just not where I'm at. And the kids can sense that, and an observer can sense it. So is the method appropriate to the teacher? Certainly then, is it appropriate to the learner? Why? This is a tough one. Because sometimes it's appropriate to the teacher, and I think it was great because I felt good. You know. But is it appropriate to the learner? And is it... is the method appropriate? You use a different method, obviously, to teach content than you do to teach relationships. The appropriateness. The time, how they divide the time in the class. I think it's media. We've got to use media. Kids are using it all over. It's redundant. And finally, the law gospel. And who am I to tell you that?